Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners, welcome once again to Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab. Grateful as always to be here with you. The show is about reconnecting with our purpose as parents and mentors grounded in the sacred guidance of Holy Quran, the sayings of Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, and the noble words of our Imams. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon them. Well, in this program, we try to answer questions and the topics we discuss basically to guide the parents to be best mentors in Islamic education. And we take advices from our guest expert. Today, we have the pleasure to be with Brother Muhammad Liaqat Abbas. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, Brother Liaqat Abbas is a research scholar in the House of Ilmi of Qom, and also he has a background in psychology, which makes him the perfect guest for our program. So, Brother Liaqat Abbas, when talking about Islamic upbringing, is it different when it goes for boys and when it goes for girls?
Yeah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yeah, of course, the upbringing of a boy differs from a girl, you know, in Islam. There are certain things which needs to be taught to a boy, and there are certain things which needs to be focused when it comes to a girl, yeah?
So when it comes to gender, there's difference?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, there's gender-specific upbringing.
All right.
In Shia Islam. Of course, there are common grounds as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about gender-specific upbringing. Because in the religion of Islam, few duties are upon the shoulder of a male. Example, taking up responsibilities, earning, everything. Yeah, so because it's wajib. When it comes to the concept of obligatory things, then it's upon the male, that it's obligatory upon the male that he should be the
breadwinner. Yeah.
He should earn and he should provide it for his family.
Right.
Unlike the female. For the female, it's not wajib. So
right.
Even if she doesn't work, she won't be asked on the day of judgment. Yeah.
Right.
So you see, this is over here itself. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is making specific, like, okay, you know what? This is what you need to know.
It's a major responsibility. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. As for the girl, of course, the load of tarbiyah or upbringing, like from a real infant stage of the baby, falls upon her. You know, like the mother is the real role model for the baby. The mother is the real upbringer when the baby is really small. So definitely the things of wisdom and like how to raise the child and how to be with the child, how to be emotional, loving, caring, and how not to be overacting or overreacting, example, upon the baby or what the baby does, should be upon the girl, and she should be knowing everything. Yeah.
Right.
So there's a kind of difference between both. Of course, even the boy, I mean, like even the male should be knowing it. But the major responsibility, because the mother is always with the child.
Right.
So it depends like how I am upbringing my child. Example, if I upbring my child like my boy, okay,
mm-hmm.
if it is a male, in the manner that I have to upbring the girl, then the qualities which he should be having when he grows up will be lacking in him.
All right.
Yep.
Now there's a point to ponder on that, and we'll take a short break here. We'll be back in a while.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. Take hold of your iman. Don't give in to Shaitan. Oh, you who believe.
give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafur, Allahu Rahim, Allahu yuhibbul muhsinin, wa khaliquna wa rasiquna, wa huwa ala kulli shay'in qadir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and Brother Muhammad Liaqat Abbas is here helping us with valuable insights on Islamic upbringing. Well, Brother, you were talking about gender difference, like if there's a boy and a girl, the upbringing is not necessarily the same for the both genders. It differs as their roles when they become adults differ. So does the upbringing.
Yep, definitely. So example, if I have a baby girl example, okay, yeah, and I am doing the upbringing like how it should be done, then she's going to become a proper mother when she grows up.
Right.
She's going to become, I would say, the mother which Islam wants her to be.
Right.
You see? So it depends on my upbringing of my baby girl, like when she's really small. And of course, like the process goes on, like when she's 5, 7, 10, 12, you see? So it's very crucial and important for me to know about how to do upbringing, about if it is a male and if it is a female.
So as a mentor, as a guide, as a father, it's very important for you to go through the processes like how the upbringing differs in both genders.
And definitely. The point over here is, unfortunately, people don't think about it. Yeah. Example, like they have...
So maybe there's lack of awareness or...
Maybe they don't have like awareness, yeah, of course. But other than that, they are not even interested sometimes. Like, few people are not even interested. They just do upbringing.
Because, you know, upbringing, real nurturing takes efforts.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
No one is, like, always ready to make more efforts or...
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, unfortunately.
But yes, parents and mentors will be asked tomorrow.
Sorry?
We will be asked tomorrow.
Definitely, we will be asked tomorrow. And the general concept is... they do upbringing equally, like they just, okay, you know what, they are growing, so let them grow, be it male or female, doesn't matter. They do it on common grounds, yeah, unfortunately. Of course, few might teach their girls, example, like few arts or few specific things, example,
skills.
Like skills, yeah, exactly, like sewing the clothes, stitching the clothes, example. And for the boys, example, they might teach them about swimming or whatever, okay? But this is like a very basic thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is like mostly material. But when it comes to upbringing, like on the real basis, I would say, like what they have to teach to their kids, then they lack the skills over there, unfortunately. So over here, the first responsibility, if it is a male, is... the father or the mother, the parents should teach about leadership, because
right.
He should do the management of the house, and not just the general leadership inside the house, okay, even financial management,
all
yeah,
right.
House management, everything, like with regards to management, okay, if you want to purchase something, like the father should take the child, if it is a male, should take the child with him to the market. Should teach him, okay, this fruit is good, this vegetable is good. When you, like, of course, when he grows up a bit, then give a bit of responsibility to the child. Okay, my dear son, now you choose the fruits, you choose the vegetables for me. I will tell
let
you if it is correct or not.
Themselves,
yeah?
Yeah.
You see?
So, yeah, let's discuss more, but let's take a short break here, and we'll be back in a while.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and I'm Zainab, your host. Brother Liaqat Abbas is here with us, and we are discussing how the upbringing differs in both genders, male and female. So you were talking about like there's lack of awareness, definitely. That's how parents usually go with a common upbringing with both the genders. But you said the results will be also not as desired. So when coming back to male child, you said that we should teach them the management and leadership skills by just practically taking them to the market, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And there are many more, of course, if it is a male. Yeah, if it is a female example, there are skills like cooking and everything, which normally the mothers do. Okay, unfortunately, there are a few mothers who don't even do this. They're like, oh, you know what, my daughter is too small for this. Even if the daughter is like 10 or whatever,
yeah,
they're like, no, she's too small, so she should be playing or going to school, and that's it. And the daughter is going to learn cooking after she gets married, which is not a good thing in general aspect, unfortunately. So with regards to women,
yeah,
the main responsibility which falls upon the parents to do upbringing for the female child, yeah, is haya, is chastity,
modesty.
Exactly. So because if this is there, this will take that girl, that female child, to heights which no one can ever imagine.
Yeah.
This is very important. Haya is very important. This should be taught to the child. Okay, example, tomorrow when this child goes in public and a male approaches, example, okay, maybe it's the classmate, okay? How should this child of yours
react,
respond?
You should know.
Or how should she react or respond? How should she answer? Example, if a male person, example, is asking more questions or is trying to, example, like...
Be more friendly,
yeah, exactly. Or trying to give hands or shake hands or whatever. The child
because
should
not
know.
All cultures are Islamic cultures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they may be exposed to some maybe non-Islamic setup.
Yes.
So they should be ready to respond.
Yes, definitely. So they need to be taught beforehand itself. This is upbringing. This is the part of
because
upbringing.
Because that response is not going to come overnight.
Definitely. It's a very gradual process. I remember a friend of mine who happened to go take her child to masjid, okay? And there were a few girls, like 3 to 4 girls, whose hijab wasn't nice.
Proper hijab, yeah.
Yeah, so it was improper hijab. And this girl, she's a very modest girl. She started to copy their hijab style.
All right.
And my friend, he got so upset. He was like, oh my God, no, what should
I can't even take to mosque.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. You know, it took him 1 month to change her mindset.
Oh.
From not doing improper hijab to a proper hijab.
So like just a visual scene.
Yeah,
especially a live visual scene can have that deep impact.
And it took him 1 month. He shared with me personally. And he was like, it's very difficult to make her understand. So you see, it's not like an overnight process.
Yeah.
And there are more things where you need to teach your, if it is a male boy, like if it is a boy, you have to teach him about leadership, about management. And when he grows 14, example, teach him financial management and everything. Yeah. Likewise, if it is a girl, haya, and like how to do tarbiyah. If she sees you doing good tarbiyah, being kind, being like example, loving, affectionate, she will also have the same qualities when she gives a child, inshallah.
Yeah, thank you so much, brother.
Thank
so
you.
This brings us to the end of another heartfelt session on Islamic upbringing. I want to thank you, Brother Liaquat Abbas, for
thank
being
you.
Here and for your valuable contributions. And also, dear listeners, it's not just like if you work for Haya and your daughters, then you should not be working in that modesty for the boys. But it's like sometimes some values, some virtues are more in a specific gender. So yes, definitely management is something that has to be learned by both the genders, and modesty is something that again has to be learned by both the genders. Thank you for tuning in. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, take good care. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran, for big and small. A way of
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast round the clock for listeners across the globe. The English channel of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting can be heard via shortwave, internet, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz every day on 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in the Southern Africa can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz every day on 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Iran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means.
Thank you.
The special operations by the resistance against occupation forces in the Gaza Strip, the repercussions of the war with Iran on the Israeli entity, and the escalation of Yemeni attacks against Zionists, in addition to normalization between Syria and Israel. These topics were the focus of commentary in the Hebrew media, which we will discuss them today with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, president of the International Association of Political Experts, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohsen.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you for the whole crew and the audiences as well.
Well, ongoing negotiations regarding Gaza are still facing obstacles that prevent reaching an agreement, with the main point of contention revolving around the Murak axis, which the occupation insists on retaining control over it, while Hamas completely rejects any continued Israeli military presence in this axis. Well, Dr. Mohsen, what is the significance of the Murak axis or Murak corridor to make it that makes it so interested for the occupation to take control over it?
Well, I think this exit or corridor was created in order to make another geopolitical situation in Gaza, in order to
due to its significance
in terms of collecting the Palestinians at some point in the south and not returning to the north, in order to prepare, pave the way for the new situation in Gaza, to facilitate also their strategy for dominating Gaza and putting the Palestinians, and also trying to damage the whole tunnels in Gaza, also to try to determine the situation for the resistance, because the resistance now is going with great operations inside Gaza, and the Israelis feel that every day, they say it's a difficult day. Many of these soldiers were killed or injured, their tanks and their machines always have been exposed to all kinds of operations. So they want to try in order to push the Palestinians from the north and from the middle of Gaza into this area of southern Gaza. That's why this is important, because they want to keep it as a powerful point to besiege this southern point in Gaza for as a preparation for the future of the Palestinians in Gaza, to migrate them, to try to push them out of Gaza. That's the point, I guess. That's the Israeli point. And it seems that the Americans are perplexed, hesitant to say that, because of the Arab, the Qataris and the Turks pressure on them in order to not let the Palestinian destiny, let's to say, in Gaza, in the hands of Netanyahu.
Okay,
because we see the statements from Qatar and the statements of Erdogan about the massacres and the future of Gaza.
Okay, as you're explaining, this corridor is very significant
very
and very
significant
important
for the Israelis. That's
for
why
the Israelis.
Hamas
but
is saying no.
Yes. Okay.
Saying no.
So when Hamas is saying no, and you're explaining its geographical importance here, do you think that the dispute over the Murat corridor could lead to the collapse of the negotiations, collapse of the talks for a ceasefire agreement?
Very possible. It's certain that Hamas will not agree on this issue, especially Murat, and will not agree on other points, especially in terms of the exchange of the prisoners and the hostages. And the Israelis also, they have their point in order to say, well, our future existence in Gaza is relevant to what we plan for the future in terms of the military presence in southern Gaza. And it's a very crucial point.
Okay, resistance fighters in
the Gaza Strip. Yes. It's related to the next day.
Okay.
That's what.
However, Dr. Mohsen, resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip have become more daring in confronting Israeli occupation forces, as they demonstrated in recent special operations that resulted, in more Israeli soldiers killed and wounded. This was acknowledged by commentators in Hebrew media. Of course, this is a very important report. It's highlighting what is behind this deliberate escalation in the operation, resistance operations against the occupation. In your own opinion, do you think the religious element plays a pivotal role behind the Palestinian resistance escalated operations?
Well, let's say there is a kind of amalgamation between culture, religion, and fight and liberation.
Love
and
to the land.
Of course, it's their homeland.
Yes.
Gaza is a Palestinian place where they think that they should not only kill themselves.
But why was this? Why was this person focusing on the religious part specifically?
That's a kind of a pillar of their mentality in order to regain their freedom and their liberation of their land and preventing the Israelis from continuing their massacres in Gaza.
So basically, Israel is fighting an ideology.
Israel is fighting, because the report was even analyzing his voice. From the voices of Smotrich and Ben Gvir and Netanyahu, they are also going into a war, ideological and religious. And of course, the Palestinians, they have this doctrine, but this doctrine is sprung from their spirit to liberate their mind and their territories, because the Israelis are trying to kick them out of Gaza. They are trying to massacre them, kill them every day. So the Palestinians, they have but one choice but to kill the Israelis, the occupiers. Otherwise, the Israelis are killing them. Anyway, massacres. They are killing the children. They are killing the women.
It's a way
they
of for self-defense also.
Self-defense, absolutely.
Okay. The results of the Israeli-American war with Iran continue to be focused, to be the focus of analysis and commentary by Israeli military experts. Amid fears among Israelis about the future of confrontation with Iran after the large-scale destruction caused by Iranian missiles and what could happen in any future military clash. How do you see Israeli strategy towards Iran evolving?
Well, of course, animosity. They try to destroy Iran from the higher level up to or down to the soldiers or to the social matrix in Iran. So we are talking about two enemies. Iran is an enemy of the Israeli existence, especially in terms of the words and statements of Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, and Imam Khamenei, all of them, they think that these are occupiers in Palestine, and they should go back to their homeland in Poland or in France or in the United States. So in 2012, the Israelis went into a conference under the title of the Shi'i or the Iranian nightmare, where they think and they thought that Iran had this position from this their existence. That's why always Netanyahu declares that.
Yeah, but what about the Iran, strategy? The strategy that the Israelis.
The strategy is to weaken Iran and to ask help from the United States.
How will they weaken Iran, Dr. Hussein?
By these strikes against the uranium positions, posts, and also to try to kill. They killed leaders of the army and the Revolutionary Guards. And we are talking here about an open war between Iran and the Israelis. Unfortunately, some of the Arabs, they don't understand this kind of animosity and this kind of position between Iran and
Israel. So you think that the Israelis would attack again?
They might. They are saying if the Iranians are returning to the enrichment of the uranium, they will fight back. They will hit. They will strike against Iran. But now Iran is more prepared and ready for any attack to re-attack, retaliate in order to keep its security and its position. Well, Iran, after this attack from the Americans, especially and under the auspices of the Americans, I guess the Iranians now are stronger, more aware, more conscious of the details of this battle or this war between Israel and
Moving on to Yemen and to the Israeli entity's inability to confront Yemeni support front for Gaza, where a military analyst on Hebrew Media acknowledged that confronting the Yemenis without U.S. intervention is impossible. How much of a problem is it for Israel, its lack of intelligence when it comes to Yemen?
Well, they are saying they have lack of intelligence and lack of let's just say, will, and they cannot overcome the Yemeni power.
And that's why they need the American support again.
The spiritual and the morale of the Yemenis is very high and very strong. The Yemeni people and the leadership of the Yemenis, and also, well, I would say most of the countries of the axis of resistance, I mean Lebanon, I mean Palestine,
yes.
I mean Yemen, I mean Iran, now they could strike. They could go and raid against Iran and Yemen, but they cannot beat them and they cannot tell them to surrender because they are stronger in terms of their doctrine and in terms of their power.
But you can
obviously
see, Dr. Mohsen, how they're actually begging for an American intervention.
Yeah, that's
again,
true. The Americans, they went into a ceasefire, into a truce with the Yemenis because they know that the Yemenis, the Houthis, they can strike against the Americans and the British. Yesterday, before yesterday, they have they have hit one of these great ships. We are talking about a real battle, and the battle, and of course the Yemenis are prepared in all means, and they have the these missiles, and they are really breaking. They are breaking the let's say the morale of the whole Israelis, all the occupiers, the settlers.
Let's take a look on the Israeli social media that commented on Yemeni front and the attacks launched by Yemeni forces on the Israeli entity.
Rania Chalom, what happened to the crew members of the ships the Houthis sank? Why does no one care about them? Why didn't anyone rush to help them? Why didn't the international community scream? Shalev Haham, I set my alarm for 5:30, but the Houthis said, let's wake the Israelis a few minutes earlier to annoy them. That's exactly what they're doing. Tali Ezra, the agreement between Trump and the Houthis was limited to not sinking American ships. The American president ultimately does not care about other countries and doesn't understand the global economic importance of paralyzing ship movement in the Red Sea and Suez Canal.
To Syria now, where Hebrew media continues to follow the ongoing talks between Tel Aviv and Jordan government regarding normalization between the two sides. Israeli commentators pointed to the gains that the occupation entity will get from an agreement with Syria. Well, do you think that Israel stands to gain this much from normalizing with Damascus? They're speaking about shaping their security reality, re-engineering the borders.
Well, I think the Turks and, of course, the Americans, they have, let's to say, handed the Syrian territories to the Israelis. And I guess the Syrian regime, new regime, Ashara, is going for naturalization, and they have declared that. They have statements about, and there are secret, not secret, actually, overtly, they are talking with the Israelis, and their statements are not against the Israelis. On the contrary, they are against the Palestinians and the Lebanese. And I guess we have a new history in Syria.
Okay, but this normalization, what will Israel gain from it? How much will Israel gain from
it? Well, it's gaining one of the...
securing the borders to its
geopolitical
own benefit.
Locations inside the axis of resistance. I guess this is one of the weakest points of the Arab region now, and the Islamic region, and the whole liberation points. But I would say that will not weaken the doctrine and the morale and the power and the insistence of the power in Lebanon and in Yemen and in Palestine.
Okay, but
and
according
in Iran.
To your own analysis, Dr. Mahsen, do you think that the Syrians would accept this normalization?
I would say no. They will continue, especially some groups who are believing, and they have historical belief in fighting against occupation and against the occupiers and invaders of the Israelis, and also to fight against the American hegemony in Syria. Syria will not be stable, let's say, will not settle.
Julani believes that when this normalization sees the light, then that will cause poverish. Syria will be a better place again.
They lift the sanction. They lift all kinds of the obstacles against what? But the Syrians, they have nothing, and nobody will help this new regime, because they have plans for a future. I guess they wanna go for partition in Syria. They wanna do that because the Kurds, they have handed in their arms, but they will not surrender. The Alawis
as well. But
the Americans
don't seem to want this partition that you're speaking about.
Well, it seems that they have plans for Syria. At least partition, because the Americans are talking. Well, Barack talk about Tripoli, and Lebanon is part or under the hegemony of the new regime in Syria, actually under the Israelis and the Americans, because this regime in Syria is a puppet, is an instrument for for the American plans and the Western plans. Would the Syrians accept that for a long time? I really think that the Syrians are freedom fighters, strugglers for life, not for American hegemony. I guess my ponder is that the Israelis will not succeed, especially we see Trump having this tendency toward economic relations will probably mix the situation and make it unknown, because the situation with China, with Russia, and the Russians haven't forgotten their presence in Syria.
Yes,
in terms of their protection of the Alawis and
others. Unfortunately, Dr. Mohsen Saleh, President of the International Association of Political Experts, our time is up. Thank you for joining
us. Thank you.
It's too late. If you haven't spoken up yet, it might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper-thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the Hall of Shame. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history. Should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. America gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms. Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice. Our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. The thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too
ocean of dua.
Al-Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam ziyaratan minni wa niyabatan an walidayn.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of زيارة إمام الحسين عليه السلام، زيارة العاشوراء. So stay with us.
فلعن الله أمتان أسست أساس الظلم والجار، عليكم أهل البيت. ولعن الله أمتان دفعتكم عن مقامكم وأزالتكم عن مراتبكم التي رتبكم الله فيها.
Brothers and sisters, up to now, we have counted different consequences of the deviation and the foundation of injustice against the Ahlul Bayt. We have talked about the deviation in Islamic beliefs among the Muslim Ummah, like their thoughts about the wilaya. We sufficiently discussed the case of interpolations of Sharia, the path to the proximity of the Almighty Allah, and also the fact that this deviation facilitated the ground for the ignorant Muslims to have the audacity to question and challenge the divinely chosen later on. And today, we will talk about what happened in the community of the Muslims, facilitating the ground for disunity and, as a result, weakening the power of the Muslims and Islam, is a fact that can directly be related to that very deviation. فَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ أُمَّةً أَسَّسَتْ أَسَاسَ الظُّلْمِ وَالْجَوْرِ عَلَيْكُمْ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ. Therefore, may Allah distance from His mercy the Ummah that laid the foundation of wrongdoing and injustice against you, Ahlul Bayt. Dear listeners, this policy of divide and rule has always been helpful to the oppressors and has always been destructive to the oppressed. When the disbelievers observed how devastating this policy can be, they tried to employ it wherever and whenever they could. On observing the Shi-Sunni divide, the enemies of Islam would always induce hatred and animosity among the Muslims so that they are able to subjugate, dominate them. And let me tell you, we can clearly, tangibly observe the same even today. The disbelievers allow activities in different places of the Muslim world to rationalize their forceful presence, and in some Muslim lands, lots of wealth is spent to motivate a group of so-called Muslims to carry out terrorist activities against another group of Muslims who have a different ideology. Whereas the aim of the satanic enemies of Islam is to create unrest and disunity among the Muslims so that they can control them however they want.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Some other enemies are trying to establish two things, terrorism and disunity. Some of them try to publicize their terror throughout the world to tarnish the name of Muslims and Islam in general. And the perpetrators of such massacres undoubtedly instill hatred between Muslims and lead ignorant groups among the victims to retaliate, which in turn results in greater bloodshed. Therefore, the slumbering Muslims should wake up. They should realize that unless they change their attitude and come to their senses, they will continue to be with the victims of this bloodshed, to be the victims of this discord and this disunity, and they will never gain control over themselves. This does not mean that the real perpetrators of the massacres should not be condemned, apprehended, or punished. But it means that a vigilant Muslim must not be provoked to attack a Sunni Muslim just because one of his fellow Sunni brothers committed an act of terror. It seems now that we have come to a better understanding of Ummatan Assasat Asas al-Dhulmi wal-Jawr. That's why we have to shout, فَلَعَنَاللَّهُ أُمَّةً أَسَّسَتْ أَسَّسَ الظُّلْمِ وَالْجَوْرِ عَلَيْكُمْ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ. May Allah distance from His mercy the community that laid the foundation of wrongdoing against you, the household of the Prophet. Brothers and sisters, I assume we have sufficiently discussed this part of the ziyarah, but yet one important question remains. Why do we say لَعَنَاللَّهُ? Why do we ask the Almighty Allah to distance from His mercy those people? Is expressing la'an permissible? This is the question that, God willing, we will answer in the next program. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين لبيك يا حسين لبيك يا حسين.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Good night to all our dear listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Very nice to have you with us. I'm hosting you for the next hour. Stay with us into the early hours of this morning. Today is Wednesday, 16th of July 2025, corresponding to the 25th of Tir 1404 on the Iranian solar calendar and 20th of Muharram 1447 of the Islamic lunar Hijri calendar. We start this hour's lineup with Youth Station. The program is all about young people and addresses topics which are all related to young people. Our varied radio productions feature will follow. And after that, it's time for Minbar. The program covers speeches on a host of subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. Stay with us for the next hour.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station. I'm Asma, and I'm so happy to be here with Nahid.
Same here.
How are you?
Good. A little bit tired, but still great.
Tired. Yeah, I know that you're a hardworking girl, so you must be tired. You know, because the speed of life is getting so high, and we have to actually moderate ourselves and manage this timing, and this is the part that becomes so difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we feel so tired sometimes, actually. But anyway, is it a thing that is related to only our era, our time, or no? In past also people felt this tired.
Would they even label us as lazy people? It drives me mad.
You know, I think they label us as lazy because in past people did stuff that was more tangible, like,
yeah,
they went
more
to
physical.
The field, more physical. Yeah, very true. Like they went to the from the very morning they started,
yeah,
they had to go through too much of drudgeries.
Yeah,
like right now there are machines helping us, but it doesn't mean that we
more
are
lazy.
Less active than them.
Yeah, you know, recently I was talking to my nutritionist. As you know, I've been on a diet last year.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I was just like rechecking my health with him. And then he started by just blaming, okay, you young people are lazy because you don't walk. And I was like, okay, I'm not taking some tools. I'm going to the land for farming every day.
Yeah.
But still, I'm working.
But that doesn't mean I'm
not
active.
Yeah, I'm doing
active.
The things that you cannot even imagine. I'm,
yes,
managing lots of things that you can't just time them. You cannot manage this time for those plans that we young people are doing.
Yeah.
So I think the problem is this, that sometimes the previous generations, not all of them, of course, like our parents are seeing our plans and they are fascinated by how the young people today are managing lots of things.
Managing everything.
Yeah, I know a 19-year-old girl who is a teacher, who is a translator, and at the same time she works at a company. I mean, full-time job at the same time, two part-time jobs. So, and she studies.
Yeah.
So when we just look at them, in the past it was just simpler. The definition was simpler.
I guess what they blame us and accuse us of being is not being lazy. What they mean is actually maybe not being spirited enough,
yeah,
to show it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we are not lazy people. Like, it's very clear that we're not lazy, But maybe we're not making too much of a voice out
and
of it.
And our era
it's
has
not
changed.
So busy. Yeah.
No, you can't see our effort. Mm-hmm. One person from outside cannot simply see what we are doing. They look at us as people who are just sitting in a chair all day, maybe, and they say, okay, this person is lazy. Just because the work of the young people today is not physical, because they're not walking the whole time, even if they are, it's not visible.
Exactly. The same thing that I was just trying to say, that maybe right now, because of us not doing physical stuff, too much of physical stuff that is so tangible. Like, you know, the problem with people is that if you do not show them you're running, you're too much working, they would not believe it and they would take you as a lazy person. Yeah. Specifically, they accuse the youngsters, but they forget about the fact that, okay, time has changed and these youngsters have got the planning for their time.
Yeah.
And they do things mostly with their cell phones or while they're sitting in the while they're sitting in front of their laptops or computers. So there is no longer that much of a need for you to be in a hustle and bustle in front of people. That's why they would take you as lazy.
Yeah, and I would always try to challenge this stereotype that young people are lazy, because I think even today, because of the problems of the world, because life is being more complicated, I think even young people are more hardworking than the past. In the past, the way was clear. Wow. I mean, I'm not saying that they were just being comfortable, everything was ready. No, of course not. They had their own problems. But the way of life was clear and simplified.
It was simpler.
Yeah, it was simplified
for them. That was really simpler.
They knew, okay, I had to wake up every morning, go to school, come back home, help my mom, and then in the afternoon do the homework, and day was over. I mean, no other pressures from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But today, imagine the life of a teenager, even a teenager at the age of 16, 17. They have the wants and dreams and needs that sometimes parents are not able to support them. So they know that they have to take some actions. They have to do something for the things they want, for their dreams.
Yeah.
Some of them are working.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they have to study because it's how life goes. They have to be educated to get a good job.
It's, you know, it's multi-factored, multi-dimensional
Now there
sort
are too
of
many
issue.
Perspectives to a simple life.
Yeah, it's a multidimensional sort of an issue that we have to consider different parts of it. But as for now, for the introduction, just believe it. Youngsters are not lazy, but they have different plannings. We go for a break and then we come back to see the changes and the differences of this generation with the past generations in the, actually, in the case of laziness.
Yeah.
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step. And that's when you opened the doors for me. Now, alone, I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
So how do we define being lazy? Like, a lazy person does not go through too much of working and they are disinterested in everything. They try to distract themselves from doing the things they have to do and they try to evade the responsibilities. But the youngsters today are evading things. Are they really not working for their life? I guess right now, even the youngsters below the age of 20, they're trying to be independent and they try to work. So is this a sign of being lazy? I don't think so. By the way, you're listening to Youth